Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Haley Schwarfar, J.D. Bunkus. Raptors lose. DeMar DeRozan wins. But guess who also lost? Basketball fans. Because, again, another official with a hero call. Gary Trent Jr. cooking again, looking great, and just thinks he gets a foul call at the end of a tight game, and he does a claps at the ref, points at his form, like a little aggressive-ish looking, I guess, because he's clapping at the ref, but the ref tees him up, throws him out of the game, gets him a second technical foul, completely changes the course at the end of the game. Why does this keep happening? Why is Adam Silver not stepping in here? I'm really tired of this. And it's one thing when there's no fans in the building at here in Toronto. It's another when you're actually playing in front of fans. I got to say, like, it's disgusting. It's deplorable.
Yeah, he leads this comeback. He's buzzing. The Raptors are within a few points. Gets ejected with the dying seconds left in the game, too. Like, it is just so ridiculous that they make this decision. The emotions are high. Let them play. Like, they needed him down the stretch too. They could have used him when they were only 2 or 3 points behind, but they just decided that, you know, okay, this is the call we're going to make. And it wasn't, and it's something that's happened over the last couple games. Who got ejected the game before?
Justin Champagne.
And I don't think that one was really justified. And Gary Trent now getting tossed out because he clapped a little bit in someone's face. I don't know. It's just, it's ridiculous. And it's what the kids say. It's not pee.
Okay, TikTok.
We're not doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not.
It's not pee.
Okay, yeah, TikTok. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I guess you're young enough to do that.
Yeah, it's not pee. That was a not pee call.
All right. sure. So Tony Brothers did not have a good handle on that game, and that tends to be what happens in Tony Brothers games. Historically, that has actually benefited the Raptors in Tony Brothers officiated games, but in this one, yeah, it was all over the place. You know, like, there was the DeMar second technical where they couldn't figure out if DeMar was tossed or not because the first technical was technically a non-unsportsmanlike double negative technical, so he got two techs but wasn't ejected. And then, yeah, the quick trigger on the Trent one. Even like the Trent Vucevic thing was like fairly innocent as far as like they had been separated and then they just kept talking as they walked back to their benches, and that was where the first tech came from. The Champagne and PJ Washington one from the night prior was, you know, that one was at least a little bit more. They spent 4 full minutes giving it to each other back and forth up and down the court, but it's tough. The Raptors came back from down 19. They took a lead for the first time in the game with 3 minutes left, and then Gary Trent, who has been red hot the last two games, and really from three since he came back from that ankle injury, 6 of 10 on threes again last night, and he had the mid-range game working too. The Raptors just don't have, especially offensively, they don't have the horses to lose Gary Trent Jr. on top of already not having Fred VanVleet there. Non-Gary Trent guys were 6 of 21 on threes in that game, and that's, you know, when you're talking about late-game offense and trying to close out this comeback, even against a team that wasn't having a very good night defensively like the Bulls, not having Trent there is huge because you have Siakam with the ball in his hands and no shooters around him. So, yeah, you know, maybe you don't want to go iso Siakam against Javonte Green, but there's no spacing. There's no one really for him to run pick and roll. There just weren't a lot of options there once you lost Trent.
Yeah, the Raptors don't have a lot of players. We just had a discussion about how they're going to start playing more than six guys. Like, that was yesterday. So, yeah, no, Toronto can't sustain losing the only guy on their team right now that looks like he can get you an easy 30 with his shooting. So, this is just an actual Adam Silver has to do something. Mm-hmm. This has happened way too many times this season. I get it when, like, the Champagne PJ Washington one, I actually don't mind because that's almost like the league doing its due diligence, because if those guys stay in a game and they fight, then you're screwed as a league. Something bad happens, something emotional happens.
I want the chaos.
I know, but it's a dude, like I said, the NHL, the NBA, when people go, oh, this guy got suspended or this guy got hurt, it's like, yeah, the premeditated element of it. You can't have those things. They're really risky in that sport. So, fine. PJ Washington shoved him in the face a couple times. Champagne started it. This is one where it's just a player that's heated at the end of a game and he claps at you. Like he claps at them and you throw him out of the game. It's just outrageous. It's truly outrageous that an official would do that. Like, there's just no excuse. And I get why they say don't complain at the podium and they're like, don't bitch about the referees and don't do this and that refs have a hard job and blah, 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 blah. That is just pathetic. That is just truly pathetic that you would throw out a guy having that kind of a night in a game that is that close in that scenario because he clapped at you a couple of times. Ugh. Like, I have nothing else to say about it. It's just Adam Silver. Do something.
The telltale sign that you had a bad night as a referee is... So for anyone who doesn't know, we don't get, as reporters, we don't get access to officials on a regular basis. We have to request that from the league, and then the league takes it, goes through the officials, and then a pool reporter, which is just like one person representing the entire media, gets to go and ask the referee two, sometimes a third question to explain what the heck. And Doty Brothers got the full three-question treatment from the pool reporter last night, Casey Johnson, in Chicago. So it's, yeah, if you got to walk to do the pool reporter thing, you know you had a rough night at the office. It's the one I remember most, JD, you mentioned it the other week, was the Mello one where they didn't review it or whatever. But, yeah, to throw the team's top scorer out with 2 minutes left in a game, a very tight game, it's just – it's not in the spirit of – the rule, right? Like you didn't throw that guy out because, oh, all game he's been talking smack to the officials and he tried to show him up. It's like, no, you were in a one possession game. He thought he got fouled and he reacted to that. And
emotional moment. Like, let it be. Like, yeah, the players are playing with emotion. Whatever.
To be clear, this isn't a Toronto-centric thing either, because for a second there, when we thought DeMar got tossed at the end of the third because it was his second tech before that got sorted out, I felt the same way then. It's like, this is DeMar, and DeMar's cooking, and he's playing his ex-team, and you're going to tech him up for, I mean, first of all, the hanging on the net cylinder interference thing, and then for, again, same kind of thing. You get frustrated and slam the ball down. Do we not want guys caring and showing emotion in these situations? It was disappointing. It took a little bit of gas out of what was a really fun game overall, and yes, a fake comeback for the Raptors. It's what they do. But the fourth quarter of that game, and even the third, really, as the Raptors came back, was really fun.
Yeah, I kind of think the Raptors win, though, if Trent stays in that game. And they do have some. Yeah, they do have some fake comebacks in here. And I really hate doing this, too, because Raptors fans and basketball fans in general, but this fan base and the broadcasts and just everything, is way too much bitching about the refs always. Like, Toronto fans act as though the referees are out to get them on a given night that is just at an insufferable level. And I've complained to you guys at times where it's like, God, the focus, can we just focus on this game for 2 minutes without just constantly hammering the officials and focusing on what the only stat I ever always know in the broadcast is like what the fouls are if the Raptors are down in the foul category, right? Like, it happens nonstop. But that was just one where I go, you can't have that as a league. You cannot have it where star players are thrown out for clapping at officials, where the sensitivity rate for an official is just, oh, you got clapped at and you threw out and you changed the course of an important regular season game. That was an important game for the Raps. They went two in a row here against the Bulls in Charlotte in that fashion, a comeback. That's a really, really exciting win. So if we take that out of it, you know, Blake, I know you want to follow up on this point, but if we take that out of it, that the Trent, that he gets tossed out of this game, I do think that from just a momentum standpoint and the way that the Raptors have looked over the last couple of games, you got to be pretty excited, especially given like how they're doing this.
Yeah, I mean, to even just to do it without VanVleet, like take away any of the in-game context, you say, hey, they beat the pants off Charlotte and they almost beat the Bulls on the second night of a back-to-back without VanVleet. You're pretty happy with that. The Trent thing, to your point about could they have won, I mean, he's the game-high scorer at that point with 32 points. Yep. The Raptors are down three after the technical free throw.
How many threes had he hit, too?
He had hit six threes.
Six, yeah.
There you go.
This is what their offense was down the stretch. Chris Boucher rushed three-pointer early in the shot clock.
Didn't love Delano that.
Delano Banton gets a loose ball fouled and misses both at the free throw line, gets his own offensive rebound, but then OG misses a three, and then there was the Pascal ISO against Javante Green where, you know, it's it's okay process. He does get 2 feet into the paint, but we've seen him miss that shot a little bit of time. No. But you look, you watch that back. There's no other option. Like, he's got four, he's got three non-shooters and OG kind of just like hanging around, and there's not a lot of action going on. So those are, and then they're down six at that point. So those are the three kind of possessions that they had. And yeah, Gary Trent being on the floor. I mean, first of all, I thought they should have probably closed with Banton over Boucher before Trent got tossed, and then Banton came in for Trent. So maybe you have Trent in there instead of Boucher, or maybe it's Gary Trent. You know, that offensive rebound comes out to Gary Trent or something like that. Or even just Gary Trent spotting up in the strong corner keeps the Bulls from sending extra help at Siakam to the paint. Again, game high scorer, probably the Raptors' second most important player when Fred's out. I love OG, but when Fred VanVleet's not playing, you need Gary Trent's offense more than you need the all-around contributions that OG gives you. So, yes, I don't mean to harp just on the officials, because I think this all informs kind of what the offense looked like all game anyway and the late-game execution. One more point for optimism for you, JD, in terms of how things have looked, even if the wins haven't come universally. 2-2 over their last four. That's Wizards, Trailblazers, Hornets, and Bulls. None of them are terrible teams. It's not the hardest of schedules, but for the first time all season, the Raptors have strung together four games in a row where their half-court offense has been league average or better.
Yeah, and it's been noticeable, and it's also something that last night, again, they go deeper and they use more players, and I go, this is actually helps your team win.
Shocking,
using other players who have other skill sets that actually fit around these guys might actually be helpful and useful, but I do have a bit of frustration, though, just that the Raptors have played well these last couple of games. They played well against the Bulls, but they still lost, and they go 500 again. You know, it's just like this 500 hump. You know, when you're watching a game where your team is down 12 and they keep cutting the lead to 4 and 5 and you keep going.
Do I know just... that? Yes, I watch the Toronto Raptors regularly.
It's just that you, and you just keep thinking to yourself, you know, if you can just get over this threshold, if you can just get over that 4 or 5 point, like, trail, that 4 or 5 point hump, you're going to come back and win this game. And anybody who watches enough sports feels it. And that's just how I feel with this Raptors team right now, where can you just string some wins together? Can you just go 4 or 5 games above 500? Because I don't think that they would look backwards. I think that it would really open this team up. I loved Scotty Barnes yesterday. I thought that his game was kind of lost in the shuffle a little bit. I don't think I've complained about the playmaking, but I've said, hey, you know, for a guy that puts himself in his Twitter bio as a 6'9 point guard, that sometimes I haven't really felt the point guard element to his game. And last night, you just saw some flashes of it. I really liked what he was doing offensively with some of the playmaking, with some of the passes. And he's had some pass, like he had a pass, I think it was the first quarter last night, where he just whipped it out of bounds. Like, hey, he just like came downhill, he just whipped it. And I'm like, that's okay though. That's a growing pain that I want to see from you. You know, I appreciate that stuff. Tough one for Siakam though. I know he has the good box score game, but it wasn't.
He only had 12 points on 3 of 12 shooting. Definitely a tough Siakam scoring game. I still thought the point guard stuff we've been talking about was still great.
It was, but it did remind me again of how this team is going to need to do things, and how, like, I really would have rather... That was the other part of the Gary Trent ejection, is you just really wanted him to be the closer, because there's just something... And Blake, I wanted to ask you about this, like, in Ailish too, like, about just, you know, confirmation bias and not trying to put those things too much in your head, but there's that pivotal moment in the game, right? And Siakam gets the ball, and he goes ISO, and it just doesn't go in. And it was kind of one of those things where I'm like, can just one of these drop once? This feels more than just bad luck at times to me. This just feels like a thing.
It is, look, we have some sample now the last 2 years and this season to a lesser degree. And it's not the most convincing. Like last year, he was really bad in clutch situations. Prior to that, he'd been mostly fine to good. And even this year, like, he's shooting 46% in clutch situations. He hasn't shot a lot of threes, but he's 1 for 2 on them. He's been mostly fine. It's just these very last possession situations that look a certain way. So again, I want to take it back to just like the cost of losing Gary Trent when you already have no Fred VanVleet. And you can go back and watch that last play. And obviously, look, people don't like ISOs. There's nothing surprising about that. And you can justify an ISO a little bit more when you're tied or when you're leading, because it eats up clock and it's a low turnover option, right? When you're trailing, maybe a little less so. And you look at the spacing on that play, and this was a thing all night where anytime Pascal Siakam got below the free throw line, whether it was trying to drive or post up, the Bulls were almost hard doubling him. Like, not just shading, not a base go to have a guy, an extra guy around the rim. They were borderline double teaming him and then also shading guys off the shooters into the paint, because most of the time the Raptors only have one shooter on the floor. So I do think, yes, Siakam has struggled in those situations. 9 of 20 on twos in the clutch isn't that bad. But you see the cost of not having Gary Trent, not having Fred VanVleet to pick and roll with or to kick out with in that spot too.
Well, give me context on somebody else's clutch shooting percentage, because I think last year, because of the pressure and the conversation around Siakam not being able to be the guy and like not hit those shots, I almost am spending more time watching him and analyzing, okay, is he going to get this? Oh, he didn't get it. Like, okay, here's a trend. So who's better? Who's worse? Like, just, yeah, I don't have those numbers in front of me.
Can I just say something quickly too, Blake, in this context is like, this is what I look at too with him is, you know, you say those numbers and they're not that bad this year. And it's kind of feels like a little bit picking at nits, but like, that's a lower field goal percentage than what his field goal percentage is. And I don't know how I feel about a guy going 9 to 20 on twos. And this is just, this has been my sort of assessment with him always, is like, he's just, at the end of a game, he's not an isolation player. So you're right. Those other guys not being there is a huge impact on him, right? But it's still sort of, the thing that's been great about Siakam this season so far is that it's his playmaking that's evolving, and it's like creating for somebody else. But if you really do need Siakam to finish a game for you and score, I don't trust it. And I don't think that anything is really going to change it at this point.
So to give you some context, Ailish, there are only two teams in the league that shoot better than 50% in the clutch. It's a very hard thing to do. Nine teams shoot below 40% in the clutch as teams. It's obviously a little tougher if you're the individual scorer, because think about how the Raptors would defend Jason Tatum or Luka Doncic in the clutch and what they would try to do to him defensively. It's really hard. So you look at, I have the clutch field goal attempt leaderboards in front of me, and I'll read you some of the field goal percentages of the top guys. So these are the highest usage clutch guys in the league. 35.9%, 53%. That's Joel Embiid, though. So that's an interior center.
That's the right now MVP.
Yeah. 41.9%, Kevin Durant. 29.8%, Steph Curry. 44%. We get another high watermark with 49.1%, and that's Jokic. So the only guys in the top 10 in clutch usage shooting even close to 50% are Embiid, Jokic, and JD, you're going to get a huge laugh out of this one. Russell Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook's high on the list?
49% in the clutch.
That's amazing. So that's...
Yeah, but basically all that is to say, if you're shooting around 40% on heavy usage in the clutch, now threes are worth more. So some of these guys, you know, like Jaylen Brown was in there, and he's hit a bunch of threes in the clutch that help his numbers. But like, even Steph is struggling when you account for the value of threes. Kevin Durant is struggling when you account for the value of threes. It's just a lot harder to score in those situations.
It is. But this is, I think, sort of the point. This is a two things can be true.
Yeah.
Is that there's just, Siakam has really shown an evolution in his game. And this year there's been some really nice stuff. Like, I think the long twos, I don't know what the numbers are, but I'm way more confident when he's shooting them right now. And it just, it looks like he is more in his bag pulling up from 18 feet than he has ever been. His ball handling looks crisper. He has had done a much better job at identifying good matchups in the paint and attacking them when he has them. He has done an especially better job at identifying, you know, when the double is coming or when a team loads up on him and when to find a teammate. His court awareness, his vision is really starting to come around as a player. But at the end of a game, the Raptors are going to need to hand the ball to someone. And I've advocated for him in the past over Fred. I've said, you know what? You got to give it to Siakam. He's the bigger guy and blah, 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 blah. But to me, he still is a guy that when defenses load up on him, there's just something that's lacking in those spots. And so we can say the clutch 2 minutes, or we can do the thing. I don't think he's ever going to hit a big three, which is a huge hurting. Like, that one really hurts. Like, he's not going to hit a step back three in somebody's face. And that is still a huge, huge, huge shot that the top scorers at those clutch situations have in their bags, right? Where they can create space, step back, hit a three. He doesn't have that. It is kind of the always barreling towards the basket and a little bit out of control. And it's sort of the same thing over and over and over again when it comes to like the way he tries to finish games with his scoring. And it feels like defenses around the league have really figured out how to do that. And so they've kind of made it okay, you can hit this every once in a while. But if it comes down to it, game on the line, I still just don't. You got to really hope that Scottie Barnes evolves into something else, because I think you got to do it by committee, but I don't really trust Siakam to do it with regularity still. I just don't.
I think my trust is there if he's playmaking in those situations, if the ball's sure. in his hands. But what have we talked about a bunch this year, right? Like, Fred is lethal on threes in those situations. Mm-hmm. So ball in Siakam's hand and he has a Fred or a Gary, or hey, Fred and Gary on the same side of the court, yep. spotting up to give him space on that situation. I'm at a point now where last year, especially early last year, bubble Siakam, I don't know that I would have, like, once the light goes on of time,
definitely
isolating.
Not bubble Siakam, buddy. I was trying to get him.
But I was saying, like, once the light went on, I'm isolating to score here. I don't think I would have trusted him to make those right reads if Fred and Gary are doing something off ball and he has spacing around him. I think I do now. And last night, it just happens that OG Precious, or OG Scotty, Boucher, and Banton are the four guys around him. And like, I just, like,
you
got to
take
what,
that shot.
I don't know what you do as a playmaking thing there if they don't help off of OG. So, bit of a tough spot last night. But yeah, that's, you know, you want the guy to be able to carry that a little bit more. I do think, again, you get Fred back in there, you don't throw Gary Trent out, that late game execution looks a little bit better.
Raptors win.
Maybe. Or maybe DeMar just rooks them even more. OG Anunoby. He's getting fined today, I'm sure. I don't know. I know Nick Nurse used to joke of, like, or maybe it was Dwayne Casey. I can't remember now. No, it would have been Nick Nurse because DeMar wasn't there anymore. It was like a half joke, like $100 fine if you bite on a DeMar pump fake or a JV pump fake when you play against them, because you know them so well and you've practiced against it so much. DeMar was a lot of fun last night, 29-7-7. And I hope this isn't spoiling an A-list item, Ailish, but showing, is it? Should I
yes.
leave it?
Save it.
Okay,
save it. Save it.
I'll leave it.
Yeah.
JD, do you have something on DeMar? Sorry.
Well, I mean, I do root for DeMar so heavily that the Raptors lost that game last night, and I didn't care because he makes that big assist and Vucevic hits a shot for him, and I go, thank you for hitting that shot for DeRozan, Vucevic. Like, don't screw him over there. Hit that shot. End this game. Which is kind of hilarious that he's just so loved, you know, that I just am like, my own interests, I don't care. I'm rooting for DeMar's guys. Like, I always believe in the, you have to really show up with your A game when you're facing your player's ex. And for Vucevic to hit that shot, it was just I've never really been a Vucevic fan. That was a spot where I went, you know what? Good for you, Vucevic. Like, way to hit that shot, way to hit that one. But what I was going to ask you guys before we went to break here, before we ended up sort of stopping the segment, is, so Banton played well, like really well, and that's awesome. But I also kind of felt like his play, because he was more involved and he's not a usual suspect to play that many minutes, sort of papered over the fact that Nick Nurse, on the back end of a back-to-back going into a game, was like, I'm going to play more guys and we're going to play more guys. And then he played Utah Watanabe 5 minutes and Malachi Flynn 8, and then he was back to a 7-man rotation just with different 7 guys. Like, I know that when they get Fred back, that's another person, that's 8 or whatever, but it's just that it did feel kind of like we had this whole discussion around it, and then Banton plays well, but then, you know, Champagne gets a DNP coach's decision. It was just,
I got to say, I'm not surprised, though. And we talked about this yesterday. Okay, so the Raptors played. They played lots of players. It went well. What are we going to see? And I asked Blake, and he goes, well, I don't know. We'll see. I'll believe it when I see it. And, and you know, he kind of went back on his word a bit, even though he said that he was going to play 9 to 10 more players, and then he ran less than that. But I don't know. It's hard to read Nick Nurse. You know, I feel like he's got this stubbornness in him that he just is stuck in his ways at times. But when you compare Tuesday's lineup to Wednesday's lineup, I thought it'd be a bit more spread out evenly.
It's time for Nick Nurse to start playing the bench a little bit more and trusting a little bit more. It's also time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Glad we're talking about the bench because you look back at the last couple games, and we'll use three games because that's when Delano Banton kind of came back into the rotation. Mm-hmm. They lose to Portland, and the bench isn't that great, but the Banton-Champagne minutes are positives in that game. They beat the brakes off of Charlotte. Everyone on the bench outside of the garbage time 3 minutes has a good plus-minus, a good showing in general. You look at last night, and they, again, kind of play seven guys, and Gary Trent's ejection colors that even more. But you look at the bench, and hey, Yuta Watanabe, plus 6 in his 5 minutes. Chris Boucher, a positive. Malachi Flynn didn't have a positive plus minus, but I thought he looked fine in his little 8 minutes.
So did I. But he hits his three, and it's just like, go to the bench, stay there. I'm like, why?
Yeah. Delano Banton, plus 41 over the last three games in 52 minutes. So the Something to Chew On here is not necessarily anything about these individuals. I think we know a decent amount of what Delano Banton is going to bring to a second unit. I think, you know, even if it hasn't been consistent, we have an idea of what Malachi Flynn and Yuta Watanabe bring, all that stuff. So your Something to Chew On here is that the Raptors, starting next week, back-to-back Thursday, Friday, back-to-back the following Wednesday, Thursday, there's another back-to-back Monday, Tuesday, and they just finished a back-to-back. That's four back-to-backs in a span of about 2.5 weeks. You gotta use more of the rotation. You have to, and that's not only for rest stuff. That's like, you're not allowed by rule to practice the day after a back-to-back. So if you're sitting these guys on the bench, they're also not practicing for the next couple weeks either, because you have no off days that you're allowed to use. So the stuff that you chew on here is something we've been chewing on a lot. It's a very chewy topic. Play the bench. Play nine guys.
Blake, you now for the rest of the show are not allowed to say back-to-back. You used all your back-to-back counters in that rant.
did I say back-to-back, back-to-back?
Back-to-back. Yeah, you said it a few times.
So that'd be a dangerous drinking game if someone's re-listening to this on the podcast.
I cannot believe how different my feeling is on Banton from watching him. And I know it's the preseason or whatever, but just when I first saw Banton, I thought, nope, like, what is this pick? Like, this is insane. Now I just think you have to play him every night. Like, I think you're going to have growing pains with that player. He's a growing pains player through and through. He is the type of guy who every once in a while can look very G League, you know, like very, oh man, you're not. But the length and the size, it throws teams off. The defense and then the rebounding component he brings, like the defensive rebounding element to his game. And you saw last night when he gets the loose ball foul in that clutch spot, is he just shows up there. He's just long, and his athleticism, he just pops on that end. So his ability to get into passing lanes, his ability to just, like, even though his footwork on defense is not very great yet, and I'm not trying to be like Mr. Coach, but yeah, he's like, you see the way he gets attacked by top end scorers in isolation, and they know, like, he doesn't have his feet yet. But even still, like, as a help defender with his length and his size, it works, and it works with this long, stringy Raptors team. The defensive rebounding, his ball handling, the way that, you know what he kind of reminds me of sometimes is Timothy Liljegren, where when he's going downhill and he's going on the offense, you're like, this looks good. This looks really good. He can snap the ball around sometimes in the offensive end. He can get one. And then in isolation on defense, you go, nope, this is the one thing you don't really like to see right now. But I like Banton. I really like Banton. And this little resurgence that he's had has been a reminder of why you play these guys, is because they can end up being real positive forces for you. You need to have dudes like this. And so more Banton. I know I've been preaching for Flynn because I don't like the way they've handled Flynn, but I really do think that Banton is better right now, the more useful of the players right now. And I don't want to see him get taken out of the rotation again now. There's also room for both. Yes, there is room for both.
Delano Banton's 6'9". It's not like you're too small if you play both those guys together.
That's it. You don't need to keep sending them to the 905 to get reps. Like, give them opportunities in the NBA where they should be trying these things out.
Let's not take away my 905 games. I had to juggle that with the Eastern Raptors
too.
Last night. Yeah, Bonga 22-6-6 last night.
Yeah, can't wait to see him back up.
How many 905 games did you go to this season?
I haven't been to one yet. Because,
oh, Ailish, how many?
I'm winning that one. Hey, I have gone to
Blake.
One.
Blake, you're our numbers guy. This is Blake does her homework.
One is greater than zero, I believe.
Is that true, Blake? Can you fact check that for us?
One is greater than zero.
Hey!
Ailish in the lead for who's the 905 person on this show.
Didn't see any Bing Bonga tweets when he was dominating last night, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, when you, like, that's the thing, though, is that it's the proof's in the pudding, right? It's just, it's already there.
I get tagged in enough Bing Bonga. It's spread. I got, my simps are all Bing Bonga-ing for me.
Yes, there you go. So, great thing to chew on. Let's take a break. Let's come back and let's do a modified A-list because we had Booker McFarland at 6:30. That's next. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 of the Fan. What is this?
What is this? Oh, you're going to find out.
Is this a Harry Potter thing? I don't know.
It's not Harry Potter.
I don't know. It sounded Harry Potter.
On,
I always like.
Baby.
Well, I love. Okay, so Ailish, you and I were talking before the show about how we need to gear up for Ozark. You know, that we're behind on it. We haven't had time. It's been so busy with sports that we haven't had a chance to watch old Ozark yet. And it reminded me of how, you know how at the beginning of Ozark, there's always the little four things in the...
Yeah, and then you're trying to figure it out.
Right.
That's the best.
And that's the A-list is when the music comes in, I go, what does the music have to do with something? I just assume with you, with that kind of a song, that it's Harry Potter because you love Harry Potter. I'm like, what's the Harry Potter thing?
It will be the first thing on the A-list, so let's just get right into it.
Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
A special welcome to those of you who do not tune in to the 6:30 block. This is usually where I would be doing my A-List at 6:30, but because of our incredible guest lineup today, we've pushed it to 7:30, so those of you... driving, getting out of bed. This is new to you. This
streaming, podcasting.
Streaming, whatever you're doing. Welcome. Yeah. Welcome to the A-List. So that song that played us in, if you're listening to the podcast, you didn't hear it, but it is the intro music to the CBC Murdoch Mysteries show. Okay. I will be first to admit that I have never watched such a thing. It does not appeal to me. It looks like
it's a great
little...
name, though.
It is.
Murdoch Mysteries.
Yeah. It's apparently in their 15th season.
Yeah, wow.
But there will be a cameo this Monday. No, not me. Nick Nurse will be featured in Monday's episode of Murdoch Mysteries. And so there's a promo, and he's wearing... You honestly can't even recognize him. Like, the hair, makeup... costume, they show him the I guess the lead actor in Murdoch Mysteries does this little collab where he's like, tune in, and then this, you'll see this guy, and then they put Nick Nurse on the screen, and I was like, who is that? It's Nick Nurse will be in the episode. Apparently he's playing a locker room attendant, and he said he will be open to criticism about his acting, so I'm sure JD will give it to him. If you watch.
It's fun. It's funny. I have to push back, though, on this, on Nick Nurse not being recognizable. That is
really
extremely recognizable, Nick Nurse. JD, I'm going to put, if I can find it, I'm going to put a...
I've seen the picture. I saw it on Tim and Fred's. I didn't know what it was.
It's a little glasses.
You knew it was Nick Nurse immediately, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't...
It was just the little glasses for me, threw me off, and the hat. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, he's going to do it.
The only Murdoch Mysteries episode I've seen is when they did a crossover with Republic of Doyle. Two Canadian shows. Obviously, I'm a huge Republic of Doyle guy. So this will have to be episode
number
two.
Never seen that either.
I don't know what that is.
Republic of Doyle rules. It's very good.
So he's previously acted in Private Eyes, which is another show I have never heard of slash seen, in December 2020. And he's all over the place. He likes to dabble in the Canadian entertainment scene, as we know, with Arkells and this. So, yeah, Monday night, you can see Nick Nurse on the small screen. Is that what they call the TV? It's not the big screen, right?
Silver screen.
Yeah, silver screen.
Exciting.
I don't know.
Nick Nurse loves the camera.
He sure does.
Like, Nick Nurse has his own hat, you know, Nick Nurse hats. He loves going on stage, loves bringing his guitar, loves the photo shoot. Like,
he loves himself.
Murdoch Mysteries. I feel like if you are somewhere out there and you're even making a home movie, you know, you got like, you're like, hey, we might get 400 people to see this, Nick. He might do your home movie. Like, I feel like he's got to be, if you need him to do media outside of our, this kind of media, sports media, he's probably available. You know, like, I think you can get Nick Nurse to do stuff.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if he would be on a Family Feud Canada episode with Jerry D. Like, I feel like that's 100% a storyline that's going to happen. It'll be a Nick Nurse either like co-host, or he'll be on the show. He likes to be in the news. So
hope he does a better job than your friends.
Yeah, hope he does a better job than Canadian women's hockey team, who got smashed on Family Feud Canada. But nonetheless, they were saving it for the Olympics, I hope. So a story that is bittersweet, has ups and downs in my heart, is
a Murdoch mystery. Is this a
no,
Murdoch mystery?
This is, we're moving off of Murdoch mysteries. That's enough Murdoch mysteries talk for today. So we all know what happened on Sunday night with the Buffalo Bills.
We do.
And the Kansas City Chiefs. No, I don't. Yeah, tried to erase it from my brain. But here is a story that will make you both happy and bitter.
Okay.
After the, it's hard to talk about.
I was like, you set that up, both happy and bitter. That's not really bittersweet, you know. Like, that's like, okay, but yeah, let's go. Yeah.
Okay, so after the Bills blew their 13-second lead, thousands of Chiefs fans have donated $13 to Josh Allen's foundation. So much so that they've raised $223,000 in $13 donations for his foundation.
That's over 17,000 donations.
Yes, it's continuing to grow, and most of them have messages like "Thank you" from Chiefs fans. Oh, Chiefs love you! Like, here's $13. It's a feel-good moment, but it's also a stinger. You know, they're doing a good thing. They're donating money to charity, but they're doing it with that little bit of punch to your gut.
I love this. This is genuinely one of my favorite A-list stories ever, because it's like, I like doing things that are, let's say, mischievous, because I can't think
surprise.
Of a better word. But people can't, you know, call you up. You know, things that you're like, you press a
button. Yeah, I'm donating to charity. It's
exactly.
Not a big deal.
This is just a great thing to do. Oh, here you go, Josh. Here's your $13. I gave you $13. Now accept it. Accept it. Yes, smile. Smile as you take the money. Why are you taking the money? Because I'm so happy. I've never been so happy to give up $13. Yeah, that's great. Like, that's a really, 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 really elite level troll, where everyone does end up on top. But here's what I will tell you with, like, all certainty. That guy would give up 200 grand in a heartbeat to have that win. if they could go back in a time machine and go, hey, Josh, it's going to cost you 200 grand to get this win. You're about to get this, you know, this record-breaking contract. He's like, yeah, no problem. No sweat. I'll write that check right now. I'll get the Buffalo Bills players to all chip in, especially if you extended it to, like, the entire 53-man roster, the GM, all this stuff. No question. So if I'm a Bills fan, this isn't bittersweet. This is bitter. I'm just bitter. I don't really, you know, we'll donate to charity for playoff wins. I liked it more when a Bills fan was doing this and donating to Andy Dalton's charity for putting them in the playoffs. This one is just bitter. That's a bitter one.
And his foundation, if you're interested, was discovered after he played He beat Seattle on November 8th in 2020, and he had just lost his grandmother, Patricia Allen. So fans started donating $17 to the Children's Hospital in honor for his grandmother. And so it's got a little bit of a tie to people donating $17 because he's jersey number 17th, but a little extra bitter this time with the 13th. Just round it up. $4 extra. It's just $4, right? Mm-hmm. But they had to do just the 13. Just $4. So yeah.
That's great. I love that one.
Yeah, it's a good story, but kick in the gut if you're a Bills fan. Back to basketball. Last night, this Blake almost ruined it, but he was nice enough to wait for the A-list for me. Yep. I know, I said you did a good job. So DeMar DeRozan comes back to play Toronto Raptors. He's wearing a Fred Van Vliet sweatsuit to the game. It's in a nice burgundy color. You know, obviously you're getting your pregame fit off. There's the red carpet coming into the arena. And yeah, he's spotted wearing Fred Van Vliet sweats. I don't know if you think this is corny or if you think this is just lovely brotherhood. I'm curious to get your thought. Is that just like overplayed or are we happy about this?
No, it's awesome. It's great. DeMar.
Well, I knew you would say that.
Well, but like DeMar has a connection to these young guys. And like, I know sometimes guys who are leaders and vets don't want every little detail to come out. Like, I know Kyle was always big about that of like, mm-hmm. I'm going to do stuff for the young guys. But if you tell anyone or you take a picture of it, I will be mad at you and antagonize you forever. DeMar's the best with stuff like this. Like, not only is that. It's funny and it's cheeky, but it also it helps Fred the game. He knows Fred's from Chicago, mm-hmm. The Chicago area rather. And like DeMar just does stuff like this. Like he went when Io had his jersey retired recently. DeMar went with him, and it's like a 2-hour drive. That. Like DeMar's just That's a good awesome. Dude.
All right, we're conflating a lot of different things here, though. DeMar's a great guy, and like, there's no question about it. I always wonder who are the people that are actually buying Fred Van Vliet gear or Siakam's clothing a lot. Like, there's some of these brands where I go, who is this for? Like, who are these things actually for? Who's buying this stuff? I don't know how much DeMar wearing Fred's stuff actually puts Fred's stuff over in terms of sales. I'd like to see what the actual uptick is. And do I really care if Fred Van Vliet gets richer off of clothing line? Like, no, not in particular. I think DeMar is a good guy. I think that's cool to support your friends and show them, hey, I'm going to rock your stuff or put your stuff over in any walk of life. But it always is a little bit like social media makes it such a big deal that you're like, oh, my God, look at this. This is amazing. This is so great. This is so incredible. It's like he's just wearing his friend's clothes. Like, can we just relax a tiny little bit? It's just, all right. It's just too much. I like sports. And it's like, that's the biggest story out of the Raptors game. It's the DeMar DeRozan, from a social media standpoint, that DeMar DeRozan wore a free sweatsuit that you can't afford. So, yeah, I think it's good. Just not great. How about that?
If you had to choose between a Fred Van Vliet sweatsuit, you know the logo, right?
Yeah.
Versus a Pascal Siakam sweatsuit.
Yeah.
Really, I like the Pascal Siakam because it's kind of like a heart.
I think his logo's ugly as hell.
Well, sorry, maybe
Pascal.
It's more.
I
like
think all your guys' logos are ugly as hell. I gotta
they
tell
aren't
you,
great like, to be honest.
No, they're awful. Like, I'm trying to think about an athlete's brand that is like a good brand that is a good looking. Oh, I would actually want to. You know whose is? Nick Nurse, the NN. It's
true.
Like that.
It's simple.
That's fire. Yes, exactly. Simple,
it's in like,
easy,
it's
clean.
In like Arial font, yep. Times New Roman, just simple, boom, and paste it on a hat, sell it.
The Raptors don't write children's books. They do clothing
they
lines.
They do clothing lines. So who's next to do clothing
lines? Like, at what point are you guys
Gary
all cannibalizing
Trent, for sure.
each other? That's what I mean. Does he
Gary
not have
Trent's would be – I don't think so. Does he, Blake?
No,
his
Gary's – Gary's not going to do his own clothing line because, like, the high fashion guys can't do their own clothing line. Like, you can only do athleisure.
What if he did a collab stuff, right? with, like, Gucci?
Maybe, but that's shooting a little higher than, hey, at fvvshop.com, you can buy my logo on a t-shirt. Yeah, that's right, Fred. I plugged it. You're welcome. Yeah, so that's all. I think Gary Trent, it's the same reason Ibaka didn't do it. OG won't do it, although congrats to OG on his Gatorade deal. Which it's funny imagining him in more commercials now.
Well, a Delano Banton like TTC collab could be good.
Look, I would settle for Delano Banton them releasing his 905 jersey. It'd be the highest selling jersey in G League history. That would be true if it sold two copies, but also...
I looked for it when I was at the game. Did I mention that I went to a Raptors 905 game?
You sure did. Okay, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Kipper about that Leafs game last night. We're going to do some wake and rake a little later with Cabby. We're going to give away Zach Brown Band tickets. We're talking to Jennifer Botterill, David Jacoby. Loaded second half of the show. If you've been listening and want to catch up on that stuff later, subscribe to the podcast, The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts, rate, review, all that good stuff. Give us a follow at Fan590, at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar. Just search Blake Murphy wherever.